ready, Leslie?
I think so. Awesome. Thanks, Rob.
Why don't we get started? We'll go ahead and do introductions. Steve?
Steve Bacon, Park Regional Wastewater District.
Marty Snow, Community Development.
Mike Overman, Olson Engineering.
Jeff Kristen.
Boss Kristen, no Kristen.
Jamie Housman, Jordan Davis.
Terry Wall, Clark County Association of Realtors, Remax.
Don Hardy, Perjury Band.
Greg Schaefer, Clark County Development Engineering.
Leslie Arnesty, Community Development.
Jan, you want to? Jan?
Jan was all in Community Development.
Susan Allen, Community Development.
Kevin Tyler, Environmental Services. Brent Davis, Environmental Services.
Steve Hansen, Real Property Services, Clark County.
I just want to let you know we are recording the meeting minutes, just for the record. If you have your cell phone, if you could put that on mute, it would be great. I wanted to start out with the review and adoption of the meeting minutes.
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed
just one clarification. There are a few items that were minor typos, Leslie, that we would like to add as corrections to that. I won't go through those in detail, but I'll hand those to you. They're very minor, minor items that we want to just include in the record, so we'll give that to you.
Thank you.
So, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Upcoming events.
Upcoming events. Thank you, Don. We'll just start out here with the Board of County Councilors work sessions and hearings. Standard weekly, every Wednesday there is their BOCC work session, 9 a.m. Occasionally that meeting is canceled, so you'll want to check the website if you plan on coming over for that. Make sure it's still on. Standard weekly is the Board of County Councilors hearing, typically every Tuesday, 10 a.m. in the morning, with the exception of the first Tuesday of the month, typically starting at 6 p.m. A work session on the annual report for clean water and presentation RTC, that's on Wednesday, February 10th, 9 a.m. BOCC hearing 2016 comp plan update on Tuesday, February 16th, 10 a.m. And finally, just inside the month of March there, BOCC hearing on rural industrial land bank Tuesday, March 1st, 6 p.m. Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, a work session, Clark County Code to allow residential care facilities and larger parcels in the rural center, residential districts, and the 2016 comp plan update Thursday, February 4th, tonight, 5:30 p.m. And then also a PC hearing amending Clark County Code to conditionally allow residential care facilities on larger parcels. Follow up there on Thursday, February 18th, 6:30.
Thank you, Greg. Any thoughts on our discussion on the items?
What is the work session, the hearing PC is currently going through regarding the residential care facilities? Is that something that we would be taking a look at typically? Is it a housekeeping item?
Not housekeeping.
Is it new code?
It is new code, yes.
Is there draft code?
Yes, there
available?
Is. It's actually available. Well, the Planning Commission has its work session this evening, and it was like put together by yours truly, so it got out like Tuesday. It's a very simple code amendment itself. It would add a staff residential facility as a line item in the rural center residential districts as a condition. And the backdrop of this is that there's a service provider who's looking at buying the Slavic church there in Brush Prairie area, and they would repurpose that for a treatment facility. So they came to the board in November. Board adopted an emergency ordinance, interim ordinance, and then directed staff to move on a permanent footing. We do allow staff residential homes, which is 10 beds or fewer, for treatment facility, for treatment. This is a facility which is greater than 10 beds, and it's not allowed. It is allowed in a lot of other zoning districts by way of conditional use permit. This is consistent with allowing it as a conditional use in other residential districts. So it's actually a very simple proposal. It just has some unique conditions around it because of the board adopted an interim ordinance allowing this operator to apply for conditional use permit as a code amendment is moving forward. So.
Yeah, I actually
is septic an issue?
They have to work with the health district, and if they need to provide more capacity, that's something they'll have to do.
And it has water. Is it a rural center? Does it have public water?
It may have PUD water.
Most of the rural centers have water and sewer.
You know the church I'm talking about?
You know,
it's off 503, just north of Brush Prairie.
Right there at the track.
It's right on the east side of 509. Yeah. It used to be I think it's called the Bethesda Slavic Church.
Okay.
Large.
Yeah.
And almost a community center for that group of people.
So what block north is it then, roughly?
It's just north of 149th.
Okay, so it is one.
It's kind of up on the... I can't miss it from the freeway.
Yeah. Okay.
Marty, on the board of commissioner hearing for the comp plan, could you just give us a quick thumbnail?
On the 16th?
On the 16th, again, what that is. I mean, is just in context of what the board of county councilors has already adopted,
there we go. Oliver would be more suited to answer that question.
Almost.
They're looking at the alternatives.
Okay, they are. Okay.
Yeah, they're going to review the alternatives. And my understanding is they're going to use the baseline planning commission recommendation or menu that was there to go through. So we may see a new role.
Thank you.
I did look at it all three possibly though.
They're looking at
everything. They are looking at everything.
Yeah.
Reevaluating the preferred alternative, I think this has to work with it.
Just wanted to add that Eric Limo has joined us as well, Leslie, so thank you. Deep member announcements?
Just want to make sure everybody saw a big significant victory in the Court of Appeals on the stormwater case on the 19th. Basically, the court has now ordered Ecology to go back and modify the phase one and phase two MPDS permits to comply with state testing law. Because stormwater regulations are
Hey, question.
Sure.
So, does the ruling apply just to the parties that appealed it, or is it broad?
No, it's a binding court. It's the law of land.
Okay.
There was some discussion this morning that there was a stormwater meeting on the new code and how it's being applied, and something came up that site plans in particular are not covered right now under state vesting.
That's correct.
So that could be interesting how that plays out. We might have vesting on subdivisions, short plats, building permits.
Binding site plans.
But site plans may have something, a different criteria. However, if the Ecology then goes and updates their permit, and they say for any project that the design that goes through is good to match state vesting, then that would cover site plans as well. So I understand. If Ecology goes back and does.
Yeah,
it's my interpretation. I'm not sure that's the case, but
there's a larger discussion going on. There's a legislative task force, for lack of a better term, that's trying to resolve these issues globally from all sides. This case is actually tacked more favorable to the development side, so we'll see how that outplays. But right now, again. Basically, Ecology will have to comply with the rest of the laws.
Do they haven't appealed to the Supreme Court, so they're right.
Not yet. We're waiting for that shooting to go.
Okay, but they, I mean, they have the right to one, and you expect one, or you don't?
I don't know. I imagine if they did, we're going to have national interest coming into the state filing amicus briefs.
Good national interest.
That's likely to happen, right? How much time puts the window?
I think they have like 90 days to file.
And if they do file, will they place a stay on it, or will it continue to be?
No, they can't. They can't place a stay.
Nice job.
How long does the college have to update the permit?
Pardon?
How long does the college have to update their permit and then modify it? Because they could drive the feet too.
I think pretty quick, but I think at least from the phase one jurisdictions, they were all in alignment to honor investing rules, and obviously two of them were appellants, and Clark County was actually an appellant until they dropped out. So practically speaking, I can't see it.
I'm sorry, Don. Just a quick announcement. We did schedule our 2015 annual report and 2016-2017 work plan. So I believe Rosie sent out a meeting invitation to that. So you should have seen that for Wednesday, March 30th, 10 a.m. as I recall.
Yep.
The work session there. So
we're looking at doing a more traditional biennial code amendment round, and we're targeting April for the Planning Commission. So we have a list compiled now. We've been through it a couple different times. We're trying to go back to the way biennial code amendments were treated, which is house cleaning, technical, not getting into significant policy items. So Jan and Susan and I have been through the list a couple different times. We'll put something together this month and perhaps the first part of March and go to the board and then get their blessing and move forward. I have a check with Sonia, and Planning Commission has time in April to look at buying equipment.
What about this docket later in here? The site-specific or docket, whatever
they suspended those because they're in the plan update.
So they have,
but they have all these other. They have all comp plan related, CFP, plan policies. You know.
All that's been suspended for this 16 as well, though.
Yes, Planning Commission is looking at those things related to the update. Though.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
There's still time to add stuff to that list.
You can get something in, but I'm going to be the gatekeeper on keeping it back. You know, going back to the traditions of biennial code amendments, which is house cleaning and technical and minor adjustments, but let's not introduce significant policy issues. The evolving system down.
We'll do that later this year.
Yes. Yeah, you could add some in for the fall.
Okay, bring it.
But we're going to try to keep it to a double roar.
So one thing I was asking Jamie about that in infill code, I've had a couple of builders ask in regard to infill code, and when I'm saying that's gone away,
yes.
When would be the timing then to bring that up to try to look at reinstituting something as far as density bonuses and flexibility?
That's not something on a biannual code, man.
Okay. No. Yeah.
After June 30th.
Okay. Is this something that's on the county's radar? They have an appetite?
I don't think so. I don't think there's been much discussion at all about it.
We've been through that.
Oh, I know.
No, I don't think there's been much interest or discussion. I mean, so it's something if you want to look at doing something and talking to the board, I'd say wait until they're done with their plan update.
I decided it's working really well. Yeah. Not used very much.
I mean, Portland's used every day.
Just one other item, unless somebody else has anything to add. Mark McCauley, I'm not sure if you guys received this, the annual report from Clark County, very well done. Just wanted to recognize that. I'm sure if you guys all saw that, graphically, really, really well done. Next up, shoreline exemption process.
So I'm going to turn it over to Susan, and I'm going to go check who called me. It's very important. What check do you want? My email is. It's from my wife's work. I don't know what that's good. Better take that.
Okay, so I'm Susan Ellinger. I know a lot of you. I work in land use. And Don and Kevin and Marty and I met in December and talked about shoreline exemptions and a little bit about what is working and what's not working. One of the first things we did was we formed a shoreline working group. We did that to help answer questions that the planners come up with when they're reviewing, and other staff when they're reviewing shoreline and related applications. I think it's been working well. One of the things that we have dealt with early on was when there was a question of is it a substantial development permit or is it an exemption? And so we've been through a few cases like that, and Kevin's on the group. To give us a biological perspective, and another gentleman from Public Works is in the group to help us with floodplain issues. So we have that, and I think if an issue comes up, we're a little bit better equipped to deal with that and help try to analyze issues with staff. So that was the first thing we did. And then we're looking at a few other ways of improving the exemption process. The first is removing at least one submittal requirement. Lot determinations were required for shorelines. For any development proposal that's going to come in, like an SFR site plan, a lot determination is going to be required. So we didn't think we had to have a lot determination for shorelines, so we're going to get rid of that. Archaeological. Marty and I talked about this earlier. We're going to change the interpretation to reduce the number of predeterminations that are required. Not all of the planners have been making interpretations the same way for this, and so some applicants that have exemption proposals that don't even have any ground disturbance were required to do ARC, and obviously they should not be required to do ARC. So for no ground disturbance, things that are defined as low impact, area disturbed to a depth of more than 8 inches, and normal maintenance and repair, we won't make them get a predetermination. So that is another requirement that will go away. I think Kevin's going to talk a little bit about wetland and habitat requirements.
Yeah, so on the wetland and habitat part of things, typically shoreline review always requires habitat review because they're one and the same. And so when we have a project where it's pretty clear that there are no habitat impacts, like deck replacements or minor new construction, there's no material expansion of, say, the footprint of the building or things like that. We're going to waive the need for a habitat review. We're going to also look at waiving additional fees when when separate permits are required outside of shoreline. So shoreline jurisdiction typically is 200 feet, and then on shorelines of the state, the habitat ordinance is out to 250 feet. So you get into a situation where there's some work that's in shoreline and some work that's outside of shoreline. And so there's a habitat review that goes with the shoreline, and then we were requiring habitat review for the stuff outside of shoreline. So we're just going to go with a single review. You know, we're also going to look at ways to only require ordinary high determinations when it's absolutely necessary. Like, does it really matter that we know the ordinary high if it's, you know, if it's clear that it meets 150 foot or, you know, 100 foot setback or whatever setback we're talking about? You know, how do we have to do an ordinary high? We had a case just the other day where our biologist Keith was out, and we got a building permit review. We weren't sure if a permit was necessary. He went out, he did the ordinary high determination, figured out that it was in shoreline and did need a permit. And so looking at ways of not requiring another determination that another site isn't on top of that, because he's already been out there and done part of it. And then we'll work with DOE to streamline our associated wetland determination process. So, you know, shorelines has this requirement that wetlands that are associated with the shoreline are then considered part of the shoreline review. So that's a part that's been difficult for us. We have to rely on ecology, so we're looking at ways to make that a little bit simpler. And then other than that, we've done some modifying of our staff reports, so they're a little more streamlined and can feed the shoreline exemption and shoreline substantial development permit process clean from us to the plan, and so they can incorporate that stuff into their staff reports more simply instead of, you know, I think reducing the size of staff reports and what narrative needs to be addressed, you know, kind of make it really important. And I think Susan can talk more about that. That's kind of where we're headed from environmental services.
Yeah, the last item is form improvements and really process improvements too. So we're working on a form with a short question and answer format to help with what criteria have to be addressed, because I know that's been one of the bigger concerns. Possibly we're going to use that as the staff report to reduce review time and make it a little bit easier, quicker. Limit the criteria that we're reviewing and requiring applicants to respond to the only the most relevant. And one of the things we're thinking about doing is requiring a very limited submittal first. So a short form, everyone would have a short form. Some of those can be approved just from that information. For example, we just approved today a solar panels. No ground disturbance. They're on the roof of the residence, and it, I mean, that should be a 5-minute review, but it's not. So after the short form, at least some of the applicants' applications would be approvable. At that point, we may ask for some additional information, but it would be very specific, and it would be certain criteria that the planner thinks they need addressed for that exemption. So I kind of wanted to get some feedback from you about that concept. It does require two submittals, but it gets everyone just up front with one quick submittal. And then, as Kevin already mentioned, DES has worked on their staff reports. So that's just a quick review of what we've been working on.
So when you say DES is working on their staff reports, there would be two staff reports then combined into one from planning, one from essentially,
yes. Yeah. We always do a staff report to provide comments to planning for, you know, whatever case it is. And then they'll either, and I think engineering does the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. They attach it to the planning staff report or incorporate the substantive comments from that into their.
For a while we attached them, but we incorporate them all now. Yeah. So it'll end up being one staff report, but we've got to get information from them so we get submittals.
And when you're talking about the two submittals, you're talking about one in order for staff to make a determination as to whether or not additional information is necessary to be submitted in order to approve or not approve the project.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One of the difficulties that we face with the shoreline ordinance is, and you guys have seen it, it's 100 pages long, and there's a ridiculous amount of narrative that could be put in a staff report if you address every single line item of code. And so trying to find a balance there, you know, it's difficult because every project has different sections of code that might be addressed. So how do you come up with an easy way to do that that meets every project?
And it doesn't say anywhere that exemptions are limited to these criteria. It doesn't say that at all. So, and it doesn't limit exemptions. I mean, obviously, there's specific things that can be exemptions, but it's a pretty big breadth of different types of projects, residential, non-residential. So, you know, we're trying to get the submittal process to be the same for everyone up front, and then if there's specific things that we need for that project, we would ask for them.
The example perhaps might be like Sonomish, the one Marty you came up with. Kind of getting back to your question, Mike, I think that would be a good starting place. And I think the filter there, I think part of that is they're kind of special. I think the county even struggles with their own projects on this, on stuff that the county's dealing with for road projects or whatever that might be. So I think if there's a way to do the simple form and then perhaps have some way to not have it go through the normal, fully complete process, but rather have somebody that kind of understood that at a higher level. I mean, I'm not suggesting that fully complete is not necessary, but that fully complete is pretty strenuous. So well, it can be real strenuous. I mean, so I think these are kind of customized reviews.
Yeah. And one of the things, so I've been working with land use full time now for about a month, and one of the things that Marty and I have been talking about is consistency on projects is not very good right now. So we're going to work on that. And my comment on that is that consistency between planners on fully complete, specifically for shorelines, has been really different for different projects. So all we can do is get better. And, you know, things like this will help make things more consistent.
So when Susan and I kind of walk through this concept earlier this morning, the idea is to get enough information the first cut to say, yes, this is all we need and you're going to be approved with these kind of boilerplate conditions, if you will. Or there's three other bits of information we need to get it to an exemption and then we can approve it subsequent to that. But I don't want to get into another round and another round and another round where you guys are like, well, I submitted three times now I'm on my fourth round of submittal, so we need to be able to have some minimum kind of cutoff. It's like, well, okay, if you need to submit that much more, it's not as clean as an exemption. You have to come through on an actual permit application. So the idea would be not more than the two times, and ideally that first time we. I mean, Susan said that she's done some research, and some jurisdictions through email approve projects.
Vancouver's not quite like that, but it's a letter, basically. Mm-hmm. So,
and you're right, though, as far as fully complete on a subdivision is not the same as a fully complete on something like this. I mean, it seems nonsensical to have you go through 14 different hoops when you just go through one or two.
I think that gives the county some opportunity to look at this creatively as well, to fit it within the right size. So.
Comments? First of all, thank you guys for your work on this issue. I recently, a few months ago, went through a stormwater exemption process. Mm-hmm. It was more challenging than I expected. I understand what a wetland is, but a shoreline, I would not have expected to go through the shoreline process for what I was dealing with. So I don't, but I'm not an engineer either. I'm kind of a layman that works in the business, in the industry, and hires folks to do that. When you mentioned, Susan, that you were recognizing different levels of review from different folks, or how did you recognize that? How are issues like that brought forward to your attention? Do you conduct periodic reviews of these type of documents?
Well, all of the staff reports that go out right now I review.
You do?
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, as of January 1st, so. And before that, I was reviewing some of them, but Chuck was also reviewing a lot of them. So I do review all the staff reports, and that's probably the primary way, but also just talking to folks and applicants and specific situations. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a situation where, hey, I didn't have to do this on this one, but now they're making me do it on that one.
Sure.
That's where those disruptions are.
Mike and I have talked a few times.
Yeah, there's those cases when you have a single family home, and it seems like you're basically going through the same process you do for a subdivision.
Yeah.
And it's significant. It's a significant cost to go through, and that's that one that we're working on. And that it has a lot of challenges because it has areas on it, it's got shorelines on it, it's got some slope issues, and by the time you're done, you might as well have done a subdivision of that to one house on it. And the concept is one house should be exempt from shoreline, or it's a reasonable use of the property, or it should require the same level of use. So it is a challenge, like you said.
Mm-hmm. What triggers, Susan, what's the difference? You go from a wetland to a shoreline, right? There's an extra level of view from one, right? The shoreline's more onerous or more.
It's really a different set of regulations,
right.
State and federal regulations in general. So shoreline is more of a planning focus where you're looking at the uses that can be that can be allowed adjacent to waters of the state. Whereas wetland ordinances are all about regulating the amount of fulfill basically that maintaining the same amount of wetlands that you have, quality and quantity in the city.
The other, to add on is the shoreline's regulations come from one statute, the Shoreline Management Act, that's adopted in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then critical areas are regulated under the Growth Management Act, which only came out since 1990-91. So you have two different statute to deal with a similar landscape. And then if you're doing impacts to wetlands and you trigger core, then you've got the federal framework as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Right.
Thank you very much. Unless somebody else has any other thing to add, I think this may be on next steps is just appreciate continued updates on as that evolves. I think this is definitely in the right direction. Thank you.
Yeah, and if anybody has continued ideas about, we're going to do some pilots with the new process, see how it works, and get some feedback. But if you're having issues or have some thoughts on this, give me a call.
No, on the issue, we just dealt with something this morning and last night where we submitted a shoreline exemption, and there's a little blurb in the code that says if you're doing a wetland fill, then it's a substantial permit. Is that something we can change to address this channel? Because if you're doing a wetland permit, shouldn't that be covered in the wetland permit? Does it have to be linked like that? Is that a simple code change?
Well, Brent and I were talking about that just the other day, because it surprised us. We weren't aware. And so it's something we've talked about changing. We're not sure if that falls into the limited amendment category or if it's more of a substantive change. But essentially, how's the review going to change if they're already going to get a wetland permit from us?
Yeah.
Why does it need to go through the substantial development? So I think, one, we need to get ecology on board with that, and that's going to be a challenge.
What do other jurisdictions do? Is that
I don't know, honestly. I haven't looked into it yet.
And you said wetland fill. Does that include buffer impacts?
Well, that was it, because we did everything we could to minimize that. We did not do a wetland fill. We tried to cross on the old farmer and put the driveway there.
Right.
Because we didn't want to do any wetland fills. We tried to exercise avoidance to the maximum extent of practical.
Yeah.
I think we did.
Yeah.
But still, even if it doesn't affect this project, it's going to affect something else.
Right.
So maybe it's something to look at through the process.
And no, to answer your question, it wouldn't be wetland fill.
Oh.
just the, it says any wetland total.
Gotcha.
So we'll take a
look. So I think we're going to be all right on this one, but yeah, it's going to affect something in the future.
Right? Could there be a minimal, it seems like there could be like this minimal threshold, and that's an example.
Yeah, we talked about a tenth of an acre.
Maybe. Okay.
That's the cutoff.
Okay.
That's a pretty standard cutoff with like the Army Corps.
Yeah.
Jumps us into type 2 on the permit. So.
Seems reasonable.
So we'll take a closer look at that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So next up, we've got retaining walls and setback update. Jan?
All right. Well, we looked at this code section back in December and had some discussions, and I integrated some changes that were requested at that last meeting. I realize an email went out a couple days ago with changes that looked like this, and that was a little bit premature. I didn't intend it to go out at that point, and so this version in front of you now is slightly different from that version that went out. So
the email version?
Yes.
So it should have a yellow highlighted one.
That's that.
Okay. Yeah.
So the highlights here are the main differences between the version you looked at in December and what we have now. And then when we get to the differences that went out with the email, I'll cover those. So I'll just kind of briefly run through some of the changes that have been made since December. So, starting out at F1 on the first page, would be line number 8. This first paragraph appears to infer that height and setback requirements for walls and fences get a blanket exception from the public work director when they approve a fence or wall in the right of way. So, I added a sentence here, and which is essentially taken from the strikeout on line 23, line 23 didn't really seem to make a whole lot of sense. So I basically integrated that into the first paragraph. So basically what it means is that construction of private retaining walls and fences in the public right-of-way is generally prohibited, but exceptions will require approval from a public works director. And when he makes those exceptions, he would look at, or he can look at the exemptions to height and setback requirements that are the main meat of what this code change is about.
Comments as you go, or just at the end?
However you'd like to do it.
Please go ahead.
And it appears, are you mixing two different concepts in this one? Maybe you tend to, but this paragraph 1 as written simply says that exemptions to any prohibited retaining wall or fence must gain approval from the public works director. And then the yellow section that you've added talks about heights and setbacks.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Why bother with that at all? Is it not, it's a given.
Well,
it's just additional wording that in the interest of simplicity, I'm not sure it's needed. Exemptions to this prohibition shall require approval of the public works director.
Right. So first it says you can't do it, except, unless the public works director approves it.
Right.
So if the public works director, just trying to give him some guidance,
give some guidance
on limitations on what we do in other situations.
Is he not smart enough to figure that out?
Is it going to hurt, I guess, is to have
it? Yeah, it's extraneous verbiage. Why bother? Why add complexity when you don't need to?
Well, it seemed like, on line 23, it seemed like there was already an inference that the height limits didn't apply when you apply F1.
Clarify the document. But this is the public works director. He's an educated person, high position of authority. I think he can figure it out.
Yeah.
Done.
I swear, James, but I almost moved it from one section to another. I don't know that it simplifies anything. It's really a lateral move. Do you see it that way out? Because this said it was an exemption down here, and then moved the exemption from that section up here.
No, I've made my comment, yeah. So I'm good with Jan. Doesn't he's pretty firm on his position. I respect that. I'm not. It's just a comment. I'm not insisting that it be followed. So thank you for letting me know. That was all.
You know, I can take it under consideration, and if it makes sense, and you know, Marty and I can discuss it. So, this whole section, it's like it gets pretty convoluted.
It is a bit knotty.
It is. So, and you know, without changing the whole thing, which I don't really want to do.
Let me just use the counter argument because I'm. The same level. When you make a decision and you're saying, well, we'll accept this without some criteria or some standard, something objective, I can make a decision with exception because I feel like it today, and tomorrow I might not feel like it. So there you get into a territory where you can someone would argue, well, you let Eric's project go, but not Mike's. Arbitrary and capricious.
And precedent doesn't set.
Thank you for sure that you have to go with it.
So you need to, you know, and it says that
as a lawyer. I've heard that term.
Well, and it says may apply. He may apply. He may have other criteria in the road standards that I wouldn't have because I deal with roads.
Kind of my point. Why not list those then too?
And I think that's a. The hard part is we're trying to do two things, I think, here. And we have public right-of-way, and then we have private projects. But then the hybrid of those two is, what if you have a private developer that wants to put something in the right-of-way that's part of this project that the county is not opposed to? So it's kind of a mix.
I just want to close by saying this. I really defer to the person that's in this, that has to make the decision. Here's the information I'd like to have. That would make perfect sense.
Ready to move on? Or?
No, may I say something real quick?
Yes.
I'm Steve Hansen, Clark County Rural Property Services. Being that this is in here, it is one avenue that you would pursue if the director decided to make an exception to the rule. We have many others, like in our road capital road projects. Federal law does not allow us to allow a fence or a wall to be in the county right-of-way. So therefore, you could stack these really deep as far as, you know, what you would have to follow. So I'm just making that, this is not the only one that you would follow. You would have to follow other situations like on capital road projects where it's not allowed by federal government. He'd state that in his defense to not.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think this infers that he should approve anything.
Yeah.
It's just that if he does make an exception, then he could apply the other standards that we have. Okay, F2. This section I was reading it last couple days and doesn't seem to make sense. So I've actually provided a revised version of F2. It's on the back page of the little diagram handout that I just provided today. So I just made it real simple. So I think it got lost in translation a couple times. And,
I have a quick question on that. A lot of times developers along lines where you put the retaining walls and all the way up, PUVs, things like that, which in theory become easements when the plat, well, not in theory, I guess it become easements when the plat records and then we construct after. Should not have to get written approval for that, I wouldn't think. We grant these PUEs usually as someone would grant them just as a combination, that's not right. It's a logical place to put them, but I'm not sure what the answer would be for that, but it's
who's responsible for removing a structure within the PUD if the utility has to use that for service of the adjacent parcel?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be on top of anything. Obviously, the wall wouldn't be built on top of anything that would have to be removed. It's like, because fences are right along PUEs.
Yeah, this comes out a lot.
A few more inches.
I mean, new subdivision, and there's a joint storm easement on the back.
Yeah.
And it's splitting the property line, and it's assumed there's going to be a fence there. And the fence, you know from the easement that if they have to replace the line, the fence has to come out. And then it's replaced. But the fence is going on the property line. And there's an easement that straddles it. And it's an extra layer, so you have to get written approval from the easement holder. What do? You just put a fence on each side of the easement, and there's an unmaintained section of property? Is the easement holder going to maintain it?
Well, speaking as a utility easement holder, fences aren't typically an issue. I mean, as a utility, we expect surface restoration to be part of the deal whenever we have to go in and dig up a line. Retaining walls become a little bit more of a hassle because it's a more expensive thing to try and tear out and replace. You know, a fence, typically it's just 6-foot cedar fence. You're going to take it out and put it back, kind of thing. You know, if we were on the road, we'd have to replace the pavement, so it's all kind of, you know, part of that surface restoration. But retaining walls can be a little trickier. So,
yeah, I'm not sure.
We wouldn't care at all about fences, whether they're 3-foot fences or 6-foot fences. Doesn't really matter. Retaining walls, we might be a little bit less open. I mean, we'll always do some form of an agreement that says, hey, you know, you can put that wall there, but just know that we may not put it back if we have to dig that area up. We'll leave you all the rocks, but.
So what's the logical solution? I mean, it sucks from my standpoint to have to go. I don't know how you solve the problem when you're doing the plots and all this. No one's ever brought up the issue, and I don't know that if this is existing code, I don't know that anyone's ever read it or enforced it. Because retaining walls, I'm sure, are built along POEs, but we have to expand the POE.
Yeah.
6 inches or something, then we ought to do that. But sometimes retaining walls are done after the fact. The builders put them in. I don't know. I raised the question because it just caught my eye that we would have to get approval.
I personally like the original language better.
For the sake of the conversation, there was, not being shaddocks, we probably can't talk about construction, sorry about that. There was conversation probably about 5 years ago or so, plus or minus, amongst the utility community in an effort to essentially vacate your sideline easements because they're not typically utilized unless for some reason telephone, for example, we're overloaded on this block over here, we have space over here, and they'll shoot us a lot from one to the other. They got to be bored if they can. So fences and things like that don't typically cause too many problems. But, you know, seams works a little bit higher impact. And if they do have to trench for whatever reason, it's really going to hang the property owners up. Large vegetation, retaining walls, things of that nature can cause significant problems for utilities trying to make service. And that is kind of the purpose of those. But they're not always utilized. And the thought is that maybe they're not necessary. But the utility community in general wasn't willing to demand that because it's something you need to provide service at times. So they may not be utilized every time, but there are often times where they definitely are an asset.
What's definitely an asset again, please?
The sideline easements, the typical plat, you have 6 foot across your front of your lot,
right.
3 foot either side, adjacent lots, and possibly 6 foot on the back.
Right.
Those, you know, so you got 2 lots joined, you have 6 foot through there.
Yeah.
If they have to extend cable or something from one block to the next, they can service the block over with telephone pretty easily, run a couple of pairs across that side lot easement versus all the way around the block or having to rebuild something out in front. So it provides service at much lesser cost, I guess.
Thank you for explaining that. May I make a comment? One of the things that I'm uncomfortable with is that easements
confer a legal right. And what we're saying is, if you go get permission from the easement holder, then we're okay with you doing this. Why don't we just say we're okay with doing this, but you're responsible on your own to go get permission from the easement holder, because there's significant legal rights to go with easements. I would suggest we're not in the marketplace to determine what written approval and what an okay looks like. That's the obligation of the person coming to you, to the county, to try and get a retaining wall or a fence built. I don't think the county needs to take that job responsibility.
So the county, I mean, the way this code is set up, the county is just asking for proof that you've got permission.
Well, who's
Which
to say
could
what
be
proof
very
is?
Difficult, especially
Steve,
if it's a PUD.
I got a letter from so-and-so down at the PUD, and they said it's fine. Well, actually, so-and-so had no authority to sign anything. His dean didn't see it. He doesn't know what I'm doing in my backyard. But Jan signed off on it. So, hey, now you guys got a problem, not me. I don't think the county wants to do that.
Has the current language written, has there ever been an issue associated with it?
Yeah, I was going to say, what problem are we solving with this change in this?
I don't know as if we need to change this particular section.
And just to add to that, I think, you know, there is a bundle of rights that easement has, but that bundle of rights goes to the property owner as well. So, you know, there's a blanket easement, and it probably doesn't prohibit a fence to begin with. I mean,
it may.
Well, it could, but most likely, I'm going back to Steve, I mean, I'm guessing they don't, most of those sewer easements don't say, you know, fences and retaining walls are prohibited.
No, well, I mean, the easement actually says any form of construction you need to get permission from the district. That's the way ours are set up.
But it goes back to the district.
Private matter, though.
Generally, easements, I mean, Jamie's the attorney, but generally, easements, uses that are not inconsistent with the easement themselves are allowed, which there would be an argument whether the retaining wall is inconsistent or not, depending upon you had in there and where you had it.
And what you need for access.
And what you need for access and things like that. I mean, I agree with taking it out, I think, because I think we're opening a complete can of worms that, you know, a lot of times these walls are, you know, they're built already, and then we report the block.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I mean, these walls are there. I mean, I don't want to be pointing out more and more things that, you know, somehow we're going to get code language for, but sometimes the walls are there, then the plot's recorded, so the wall's pre-existing to the easement. If that
I think
makes
the
sense.
Fence part is the, I mean, having to get permission to put fences in PUEs when there's PUEs on all four sides of every single
yes.
lot in a subdivision seems
exactly.
a little bizarre. I mean, just because it's subdivisions have fences on the lot lines, and that is part of the PUE. Is, I mean, because it's from the lot line over in each direction. So there is something that's a little off about having that restriction.
I don't think we require permits for fences under 7 feet anyway.
No.
Right? No, we don't. So they happen, you know, they happen all the time. You know, and in
right.
fact, you know, they could, even if you have a stormwater easement across the back, you know, I suppose somebody could create a problem if they're building a fence across the stormwater, if there's a swale or something like that, and they block that.
The engineer, usually it's the swales and things aren't. I mean, I'm looking at the engineer, and I was like, the swales aren't where a fence would go, I don't
know. No, but you know what happens? Is swales are created on property lines because they can't fill. So
right.
one property line comes up, they fill. At the fence line, they go up. The next property develops, they fill. You end up with a swale right on the property line. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up with like this wet patch that's the desert.
But it's the top.
But you're not allowed to create a property line. So they both fill, and you got a low area, and there you go. You got a swale there. The fence is in the hole, and the posts run out of
really?
It.
Really?
It happens all the time. Yeah. And it's just an inconsistency with the way things develop and the way the code is. So if they can agree to fill it together, great. But most of the time they don't tell us too late, so you end up in a hole. But in the trying to go by time, I know we have a lot of issues. I guess I'd basically make a suggestion on this number two that we basically
well,
delay.
So right now, as it is, I mean, I guess the very simplest change would be to just change the fences from 6 feet to 7 feet, because we're going to increase that.
The only other thing would be, do we want to even leave public or private? I mean, why? What about private easements? Does that mean we can't put it because that's not in here? As a clarification, what about private easement? Is it unregulated?
If it's not an issue, if it hasn't been an issue, I say we leave language alone and just change the height of the fence consistent with what's not.
I would agree with that then. As long as the interpretation is that a private easement, you can put a fence or a wall in.
So then the language about exceptions may be granted.
Yeah.
Exceptions to what? The height?
The height, these right. limits. Yeah.
Yeah, because the way number two is set up right now, it's fences can be put in there without
any permission.
Any
at all.
Permission and
if and wall unless, and retaining unless, walls.
Well, no,
retaining walls
retaining
4 feet.
Because retaining walls is a separate and it says 4 feet or less with approval.
That's
well, actually, yeah. Right now it says the construction of retaining walls 4 feet or height and less.
Okay.
May be constructed within public easements. And then may is a little bit of an odd word. Is it shall? So, you know.
I think the fence height and your language in here to these height limits, I think that's a good clarification. It doesn't make it
any more complicated. Are we leaving in the approval part?
Yeah, we're leaving it as is, strike. Basically, this is how I would see it.
So this
striking the written approval part.
The construction of retaining walls 4 feet in height or less, and fences 7 feet in height or less, may be constructed within public, I would say, or private easements. Exceptions to these height limits may be granted when written approval has been obtained from the easement holder.
Right.
So get rid of the
that's
additional awesome. Language
yes, that's how
after that.
That would be the simplest camera clarity.
Yes.
Do we need a motion, or is that just kind of working?
Let Jan work with
other pieces.
Yeah. This is kind of work in process, yeah. Just okay. Taking comments
okay.
And may or may not adopt.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I think we've got through the naughty stuff. Well, actually, I shouldn't speak too soon.
Did you say we think we got through the
naughty?
Yeah, and I just realized it's probably not. Not so
K N O.
I think
Rich
has done that.
So let's see. So F3A, the new F3A, basically clarifies the fence arrangements on top of the walls. And I've got this handout here. Yeah, maybe we can put an actual hand, you know, a diagram in the code that clarifies it. It would be a little nicer than this. But that's the idea that we're talking about here.
So can I ask a question on your...
On the drawing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you allowed... So you're showing here... the 4 foot setback from the property line, and then a 4 foot retaining wall, then the solid fence, and then the open fence. What about on the property line though? Because I was thinking we were allowed to do that
it's,
on.
It's the footing. It's yeah. Just the footing.
That's
you
one
see,
example.
If they have a key. If they do their retaining
he wants
wall,
the,
and they have
Jeff wants the fence on the property line.
No, I'm saying can the fence go on the property line?
Oh.
The fence doesn't. The way this diagram is, it shows like the most liberal,
Okay.
So you can also put this fence on top of this lower retaining wall.
The fence can go on the property line. You can. It's 3 point. Is that 42 inches? Yep.
Yes.
So 3.5 feet, and then you can have what you call a non. Can that be lattice? Or what are you thinking? Because I'm trying to picture what we would put up as
non-site obscuring.
So maybe wrought iron or chain link. Yeah.
On top of
a 4 foot retaining wall on the property.
Or on top of what I'm saying, but you have a solid. See where you have a solid fence and then an open fence.
I think solid means site obscuring, which is not which is slatted. Open fence is not slatted.
Right. So if you wanted to do a solid wood. 6 foot fence or 3.5 foot fence, and then you want to do something open above that. What qualifies if you to like?
Oh,
I would say wood lattice qualify, for instance.
Certainty wire.
So that you can, you know, because if you're putting chain, otherwise you're making a choice of basically chain link or a 3.5 foot fence. Because I don't see being as a builder
how it would look putting a chain link on top of a wood fence or putting wrought iron on top of a wood
what's
fence.
What's your objection?
Good thing I'm working with that. But this is what's happening.
You can make it a stone fence and then put your wrought iron on top.
I mean, I still question the need of whether we need the 3.5 foot limit. I'm not sure whether that was one of your questions.
No, that was just clarification.
There was a note in here that you had a question that Jan wasn't sure what the question was.
So, Jeff, you're advocating, I think that was...
I got that resolved.
That the 7-foot high fence could be solid. That's what you're advocating for.
On top of the
wall. Or the top of the wall, or 6 foot, or 6 foot.
If you were to do a 6 foot solid wall at the base, because the whole point is the total height. So if you're doing it down here, it doesn't matter. You could do a 6 foot solid fence down at the base. You just can't do it up here. So... The 3.5.
What you got here, Jeff, is almost 12 feet tall within 4 feet of the property.
Right. Line. But on the property line, what can you do?
On the property line, you can build a 7 foot fence.
Not on top of the wall.
No, you can do a 3.5 foot fence on top of a 4 foot retaining wall. So I guess, you know, if you have a 2 foot retaining wall, then you could. Maybe we have language that says the maximum height of a fence on top of a wall.
Maximum total height of the wall and fence combined.
Right. Yeah.
Seven and a half.
Yeah, it's going to be like...
That's the point.
It's pretty thin.
One of my concerns is just the question of the 3.5 foot. Is going with a 4 foot wall on a 6 foot fence, is that 10 foot? Is that a behemoth that, or whatever we call that, a light shader? I mean, is that, why have we picked 3.5 feet? I'm kind of advocating for, you know, for being able to put a normal fence on top of a 4 foot.
Well,
retaining wall or bringing those numbers up is partly what I'm advocating for. I'm especially advocating it for because the major change on here, not to jump ahead, but I think it's the only other major change is that you've removed the 30 foot.
Yes.
Structure, which is something I brought up at the last meeting, which I felt when we're in the unincorporated urban area, and you're dealing with properties that, you know, the homes are far away, they're going to develop, the way they're going to develop, and I can do this over other things, they're actually going to fill, in a lot of circumstances, they'll be filled eventually up against the retaining wall. And then I guess we just start all over because, you know, these holes that we're putting retaining walls, they're hills, and then that fill will generally come in. But it gets, to me, when you're in that unincorporated area, you don't have that shading, you don't have that problem. And then people are coming, the guy that builds a subdivision or whatever, I guess they're coming to that, they understand what they're seeing. That, any of this make sense? You see what I'm saying? I don't know.
Well, we do have, you know, we got in the section where if you get permission from the owner, we've added if the property adjacent to this is, the current text shows if it's abutting legally permitted non-residential uses, you know, we could change that to the zoning, it could say zoning or legally permitted non-residential uses, because our landscaping code treats properties as zones and not uses, so it probably makes sense to just change that. So if you're abutting an industrial zone, you wouldn't have to worry about these height and setback requirements.
Put a big fence on top of it, just screen it.
No, I understand it on an industrial zone.
Right.
Rural things are further apart.
Right.
What's that?
You could also include rural areas, like you don't. Have
to rural or unincorporated.
You're
going to
be part of the property line. You're not going to be.
Looking, but let me ask you why you took out the 30 foot.
Yeah, that's I would like.
Let's
start
there.
Well, you know, it seems like that. That's, you know, somebody could have their yard that they have a really nice garden in, let's say, and then suddenly he has no say that the wall is going to go up right next to his property line, and his garden area is going to be shaded. Should we be that presumptive? If the guy doesn't want to give permission, which is already in an avenue, if he doesn't want to give permission, should we just say, well, your building's 30 feet away, you have no say, so we're going to shade your backyard, you know. So the guy says, I'm going to put a greenhouse back there, something like that.
What if you increase the setback then, which you made it 50 and not 30?
I don't know. Let's try to find that too. Where'd you strike the 30 feet at?
You didn't strike the 30.
Oh, it's no, it's in the what we got emailed out.
Yeah.
And I was happy with that because I thought that I go, okay, that addresses my question.
Well, I'd be more comfortable with 50 than 30.
Well, 50 is fine. I mean,
the whole point. I agree, Jeff. To me, that needs to be there because it's for the whole point. When you get to expansion,
it's the interface.
Yeah.
Does everybody have the same document?
There was one in an email that...
It's not in this one.
One went out in an email, the one that is...
The yellow highlights.
That was printed out for you today.
Oh.
Is,
so there's changes to that.
Yeah. What you're reviewing right now.
Yes.
That's the major change, though. I think that's the only... Yeah. In my opinion, the changes in the first two paragraphs, I believe that's the only
other
change.
Do you have the one
I commented on?
I do have it. Yeah, I have both. And so I'm kind of going on. I'm advocating for some type of even if we don't go with it, I'm not as worried. I'm probably more worried about this 30-foot thing or 50-foot thing or whatever it is than I'm worried about the height of the fence and things like that. Because in most cases, we are dealing with,
I guess I feel okay about if I do a black powder-coated chain link fence at the back. I feel okay about that. I can live with that, but the 30 foot or 50 or whatever that agreeable distance is, that to me is acceptable.
So. And then defining structure as being a residential structure, not necessarily a shed or something like that.
Yes.
Now, if you build it outside the building setback, you build it whatever height you want.
Yeah, that's the way it is now.
On a rural area, so you want to move your fence in 10 feet, and then you want to put it 10 foot high, you can do that.
If you meet the setback.
If you have that. In the rural area,
but remember, now you're creating these no-man lands.
Exactly.
And this is the problem that I wanted, the flip side. So you've got the occasional gardening maybe shading, and this is where we got to figure out if 10 feet is a reasonable height, or 6 feet, or whatever. I'm just trying to figure out, but you may have that occasional... deal that you're shading, but on the other hand, in my opinion, we're taking away property rights. I mean, this is a wall that's being built on a property line, and within its property line, and within its airspace. I mean, it's we're taking away.
Well, right now
you've got a setback for there's a property right thing here that I think you've got to look at in the equity of this whole situation.
I would agree, Jeff. We don't want to create adverse possessions.
Yeah.
And we create these no man lands. So I'm trying to find a middle ground to work with, because again, in a lot of situations that I'm seeing, we're dealing with mostly fees. In Valley, is there anything within 50 feet structures or?
Nope.
I mean, you have neighbors.
Structure, but not the home.
Not the home. And I don't know why you'd want to protect a garage, but.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's different from what we.
But they approved
it that we looked at in December.
You're proposing that they're in.
Yes.
Yellow means
so. Yes. If it's double underlined, it's being added.
Yeah.
If it's struck, it's being removed.
What if it's double underlined and yellow?
It's being added. It's just the change from what we looked at in December.
Well, I think we need some examples. I mean, I think that's what you're saying.
Give me some good
examples.
One
area.
Bring it back to Jan and then we'll figure out kind of our
Jan and I kicked around the idea of this 30 foot. What would the impacts to the existing property owner be? Not to the property that's being developed, but to the existing property owner. You got to protect their rights as well.
Right.
Okay, so 50 foot would be 501, right?
So in that conversation, there are all these other moving parts. I said, let's just get rid of it. So a fallback is to go back to the original language and say that structures that are not the primary structure, the residence on abutting, that's at least 30 feet away, but on a primary structure, it has to be 50 feet away. So you're not shading somebody's,
Why would you worry about garden sheds, garages, and things like that other than a primary residence?
Well, if you had
a garden shed, you probably have a garden back there.
Yeah.
I mean, but the idea is, you're dealing with somebody who doesn't want to give you permission. If we approve this, it's going to be a case where you can't get permission from the guy, right? I mean, because he's got a provision in here, so if you can get permission, you can do whatever.
Jan, we're talking about fields again. We work very hard with neighbors. And say almost every subdivision, a lot of times we'll get all the neighbors. But, you know, quite often we get 9 out of 10, quite sometimes we'll just get a whole neighborhood that's just pissed off at you, no matter what you do. And they're not going to give you permission just because they're not going to give you permission.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then it becomes a problem because now you get a permission from this landowner but not the one next to it, and you've got a big piece of property, so you can put a wall here, but you can't put a wall here, and you can do this, and you can't do that. I mean, it's a mess right now, I guess.
I would be afraid that typically they may put a shed or something, and they'll put it out quite a ways from home, and then all of a sudden, because of that, or it becomes this, hey, you built a shed back here, and all of a sudden you can protect from any sort of whatever being built or constructed. I don't know. Residential structure, I feel good about. I don't feel comfortable saying other structures 30 feet, but that's me.
I think this whole thing has become way more convoluted
yes.
than what it started out.
I think
that we should just go back to what was proposed, because what we're trying to accomplish here is getting rid of the no man land. That's the correct term. And that what staff has proposed seems to accomplish number one, that item. Number two, keeping the massing, or keeping the massing associated with a wall and or a fence to generally the height of what a fence would be allowed along there, making provisions for having greater height within the setback by setting back the retaining walls, and let's just get rid of all this other crap.
Well, I think there's some good stuff. Getting like permission from the owner.
It's
gone way too beyond. I'm just sitting here listening to all this. It's like,
it's convoluted. It is.
You've got competing rights. That's...
We haven't been
talking about
no man's land. This solves the no man's land.
Both sides of them want something. Both sides of that
property line want something. It's been more than no man's land. It was originally brought up, I believe, by Terry, right?
Yeah.
And you weren't bringing it up as a no man's land. You were bringing it up because...
It was both. It was concerns about adverse possession and also creating these blackberry corridors. Because if you're setting your fence back off of the property line or off the top of the wall, and you're creating these buffer areas where you're trying to protect the neighbor, but then you actually end up creating this weed patch that the neighbor's going to end up staring at. So there needs to, if you're going to create it and require these 4-foot patch areas, then there should be some requirements in regards to there's some plantings or whatnot. If that's what we're trying to protect, if that's the intent, well, it's not going to happen if we don't put some other wording in there. So that was my initial. The initially when I brought it up, there wasn't. I agree on the fencing and what you're discussing, and I think that yes, there's a developer and there's a neighbor approach, so I understand that. I guess I hear what you're saying, Mike. There are substantial amount of areas where future development, and we have urban growth boundary expansion, where if it doesn't provide exemptions for these wall areas that we're talking about, or set so far from home, I just feel like it shouldn't be so complicated. When you're in a urban growth boundary expansion area that's going to start to fill in, because then this person has a wall over here, and yes, he could try to get some sort of variance, but then you're filling up a wall over here. That's just silly, you know. That's just so common sense should be able to come in play. So. I guess if it's 50 and 30, I'd rather have that than not have it in there at all. So. We could just say 50 feet from the primary structure or the residential structure. That's fantastic.
That works for us. Yeah, that gives us clarity. And that's not confusing, I don't think.
We'll do 50 feet. Okay,
so if there were a garage or something right next to it, it wouldn't count, it wouldn't matter.
Would you consider that?
It well, seems clear.
Yeah, and frankly, I'm not going to be the one making final decisions. It's going to be the board, you know. So, so.
Well, let's know when the hearing is.
Sure. Yeah, you'll.
Have you gotten planning commission on this yet?
No, I mean, you know, I mean, whether this goes as part of the biannual site, I thought that was the intention, although it could bog things down.
No, it's not.
Yeah, thank you, Jan. I know this is not.
Sure, I know it's, you know, it's like the more you get into it, the more
uglier it gets.
Far afield it can get. So let's see, we do have on page 2, line 23, we have some variation ability of the planning director to make some interpretations for unusual circumstances, not clearly anticipated. So it was asked that we have some wiggle room here. So that's what we have here. At least that's what's proposed.
Not to beat this lead up, but that's administrative approval from the planning director?
Yes.
One language suggestion is that it shall in that sentence should become a should.
Yeah. May and should put together. Should or may?
Should be. So you're talking line 26?
Line 26.
Oh. That just buys Marty a little bit more flexibility.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So, line 12, I have a question. Is legally permitted? What if it's a non-conforming or not legally permitted non-residential use? Just again, out of curiosity.
Now, line 12 from the 180 Goddard Lane.
Oh, right. Sorry. What is that? Sorry, thank you.
Yeah.
So we're looking at line 17.
It's really minor. It just struck me. It just
legally permitted non-residential uses. If it were a non-conforming use, a legal non-conforming use, then.
It would be legally permitted. What if it's an illegal?
If it's illegal, then in theory they're supposed to be gone out of there, and it's going to be residential.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's the thinking behind that. Okay.
Yeah.
I wondered. I figured that. Okay.
Yeah. Done.
Done.
Some direction.
Good work, Jan. I think you know these things in yellow covered 90% of the issues.
So on the property line, we're saying, I know the commissioners have to do it, you can build a 4-foot wall and a 3.5-foot fence and then non-site obscuring on top of that if you want. Or say, non-site obscuring, whatever.
Yeah. Well, this language doesn't say
that. You can go with a 6-foot chain link.
On top of a solid fence?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Do we want to go there? Do we want to get that specific?
I
think it's implied.
Yeah.
What? No more?
The non-site obscuring on top of the site obscuring.
Well, you know, maybe some simpler language says that you can only have so many feet of site obscuring material.
You don't want to go there. Someone may come up with something and they can come in and ask for it. Someone may come up with something really creative. I don't know, but you don't need it.
Then they'll cross that bridge.
Generally, I think chain link will, like Terry said, I think chain link.
I think chain link.
So we have direction back to Jan and forward with the. I don't know if we need to take a motion or anything on that. Or
no, let's see the final.
Okay.
See the final, and you need to get this to DC probably before our next meeting. Yes, no?
No. I think
it's going in April.
Oh, okay. So we can see it again next month.
Yeah, next month.
Bring it back next month. Okay.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Don't come into my office again about this.
Marty's got a fence. He's putting up a non-site obscuring fence.
Yeah.
I'm putting up a side obscuring fence.
I think after it's all over, Jan should get to it.
Thanks, Jan.
Jan, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Jan.
Seems Monday, but it's very.
So, Jan, we'll have you come back March, right? That's what we're.
Yeah, next month.
To finalize.
All right.
So next on the agenda is the 2015 annual report for 2016-2017 work plan. And that is scheduled with the board on March 30th, 10 to 11. and I am, let's, we're going to go through and kind of talk about what's going to be presented, but I am getting together with Andrew this week for lunch to kind of go through that.
Getting together with who? Andrew.
And so he and I are going to basically be kind of spearheading that discussion with the board, but like you guys participate if you're available in that as well. So I think mainly just going back through the topics that we have in here, that those are the ones we want to have addressed as our key issues. And I, obviously what's been accomplished, I think that'll be part of it, but I mean, I think maybe the focus here is on the work plan suggestions for 2016-2017 on page 3. And if there's, I guess, we could add to this list as well, as I think this list has been pretty well vetted. Wanted to have
it it has. I think one of the questions that we should anticipate is what's next on the list? What's the next thing on our list? Yeah, what's our next priority? And we've, I think I mentioned before, we've been more reactive than proactive over the last couple of years. So aside from, you know, this, the issue that we brought up with the fence and the shorelines, everything else has kind of been in response to other things. So we should probably think about what it is next that we want to address.
I'll have an observation. I think under the new board of county councilors, they will be looking more towards this board to look for policy suggestion.
Policy?
Yes. Suggestion.
Is that in our bylaws?
That would be things like infill, bringing that discussion back.
Jamie, policy means, to me, policy is different than the technical aspects of codifying those type of things that the county says, hey, we'd like to do this. What are the technical impacts? Right? Policy is, hey, should we do this or not? Is that true? Am I wrong or right on that?
Well, I think there'll be instances that infill is a great example. That is present in other jurisdictions. The county used to have it on the books. The board may not be aware that the county doesn't have something on the books. We, as the development community, may think it's appropriate to bring it back in light of what the market is doing. So I think that there'll be, the board may be looking for us to bring up items.
Good, thank you. And, yeah, makes sense.
And I think to expand on that, if you look at item E under our duties, the advisory board shall review and comment as requested by the county manager, DOCC, and or senior staff on specific development issues.
Yes.
So I think that that's pretty broad, that could include policy.
Thank you.
And just as a segue, Marty, are there things that are on the horizon for development implementation for the anticipated comp plan that might be part of that list? And I'm thinking, I don't know what it might be, accessory dwelling units, I don't know what that would be, but.
Yeah, I think there's gonna be some kind of follow-on items, depending on what the board's decision is on the alternatives. They may be reconvening looking at the rural land issues. Not, I was in correspondence with somebody about lot size, lot size, lot size. And I thought, well, there are other things in the rural area other than lot size. Accessory dwelling units, home businesses, this residential treatment facility issue. So, you know, there are a lot of things that you can look at other than lot size. So if there's any, you know, I can imagine that the board would want to, soon after the plan update, perhaps look at rural land issues. I wouldn't, I mean, all of them would have a much more current thought on that, but I have looked at the couple things coming through, and they've not really had the best traction, so, you know, that's something that the board would be considering, perhaps.
It seems like aging readiness and affordable housing are pretty big items in this community right now. I mean, this is a couple topics. I don't know how this, you know, how this board would address those, but that, those are thoughts.
Well, those things, so, you know, when you have your annual report, work session, you know, if you have a few things that you want to test the waters on with the board, I would say do it. That's the opportunity.
Affordable housing, it's my understanding that the county is exploring doing a work group or something along that line, similar to what
Vancouver
has had with the city of Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, the board chair and the county manager went to the Vancouver work session, and Chair Bolt said, hey, we need to be a participant in this discussion. Mm-hmm. It's not just something that the city's experience, we experience it as well. So.
This meeting may also be a time to ask the board if they have anything specific that they want us to take a look at. Again, that's part of our purview, but at the same time, we should be bringing things forward, such as, you know, we have on our list. It's just now a matter of which ones do we want to review next.
The your meeting is when? In March?
March 30th.
So I believe the board yesterday discussed a request for a work session on the fee waiver program. And I believe they are having they've scheduled a work session middle part of April, I want to say. April 16th, something like that. Let me look at the calendar. So just, you know, I know that you've been tracking that both from a distance and up close and personal, so.
Yeah, the 16th is a Sunday morning. Maybe the 19th.
So
maybe the 19th.
I have an email here that I will let you know. Let me look you up. April 13th. Does that look about right?
It's a Thursday. Oh, I'm sorry. Nope, I'm wrong here. Yeah, I am. Yeah.
So yeah,
there it is. That's a Wednesday.
April 30th. 13th. April 13th. April 13th, yeah. That's fee waiver work session.
So that probably will come back to us in March, I'm guessing, or is that the thought?
Well, I think if you know.
I think that's on our list already.
Is with regards to monitoring, so we should definitely have someone there, or more than someone. Yes, it's pretty struggling to use. What do we have on our agenda? What do we have on our agenda for next month?
March right now is pretty light, so we just picked up the Jan finalizing on the retaining walls and setbacks, and then we did have place just to kind of finalize on the annual report and the work plan. So,
and we're still working through the corner driveway issue.
We are subcommittee.
That's a subcommittee.
The subcommittee's formed and meeting times are set.
Awesome.
When is your meeting?
March 30th.
Oh, your next meeting is March 30th?
No, I'm sorry.
No, that's the board. Okay. It's early March.
March.
It should be March 3rd.
May I suggest something for March? Because the board will have had the hearing on 16th on the growth plan.
Good. Comp plan update, right?
So, I think for your interest as well, I'm going to be requesting a work session with the board mid-March on a cost of service study and fees that we've been charging since 2009. I've been working with staff, and we hired somebody to help us analyze our costs of service and the fee revenue. We're wrapping up this month. I think a few have been contacted by our consultant, Paul Lewis. He's doing some stakeholder interviews, and we're going to be presenting to the board our findings and recommendations for changes to the fee tables that we have. I'm going to really emphasize that with phasing in a new permit system, we should phase in these new fees as best we can. So I would be looking at maybe bringing some information to you guys in the first part of April. If I have a work session with the board, I want to, out of that work session, have some direction on scheduling a hearing with any fee changes that we are contemplating. Generally speaking, I think we're going to be looking at reducing some fees. I can't tell you to what extent. So we're looking at the building fees, land use fees. We do have fees actually in the permit center that we charge. So this is kind of winding down, and we've been working on this since August last year. So that's kind of a heads up. I don't know what your April month looks like.
Let's plan on that, Marty. That'd be great.
Yeah. When's your first phase will that come?
We are looking at the tail end of May.
Oh, right.
And the and maybe I'll take at the same time talk about our rollout. The idea is phase one, we're looking at a focused rollout for single family residential on subdivision lots that are coming through on the lien permit process. And from that, we will build on to all other building permits, residential and commercial, and roll that out in October, November. So we can at least share with you some of that information.
Marty, question.
Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable with these fee study as it relates to your staff, your future staff needs?
Yeah, that's.
And as things go like this, you need flexibility.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, there are many facets to this, and some of it is if we look at reducing any fees, what does that mean for the revenue stream for us to keep a modicum of workload staffing balance? Mm-hmm. Mind you, we've not been collecting commercial building permit fees for a while,
right.
And our fund balance would be even that much more robust. So the way it's broken out is we have land use review, planning fees, we have building fees, and building is really on plan review and inspection. Those are the two kind of program areas in building. And then the permit center, which has some minor fees that it charges. So we've been working on this. We have very good data that we've firmed up, and so
great.
We're looking at some things sooner than later.
Not to segue too much off of that, but on the commercial side and the waiver,
mm-hmm.
with the economy coming back and the level of service probably diminishing on roads, it would be interesting to see if there's a recalibration of that discussion about level of service and kind of
for roads
and kind of the need for capital that has been pushed aside.
That's going to be a big discussion with Keith Henderson, his group, and I think Chris Horn will be weighing in to a large degree with public share issues So.
And just kind of what's needed. I mean, is there a change? I guess is, you know, maybe part of that discussion. Is there a change in the traffic volumes that were forecasted even a year ago?
Right.
I mean, you just drive around and it's like really congested now everywhere you go.
I mean, that's true.
I mean,
and it's also good to have $1.89 gas.
Yes.
Not so much.
You good sign. Yeah. I always tell myself when I go to Front Yard, that's a good sign.
I do.
From our county, I think with a new and additional positions out of the county councilors, as I understand, we will see some new direction with that. So.
Anyway, there's a lot. There's just a lot that we've got
new things
cooking, and I got great staff that's working very hard on all this stuff.
Yes, you do. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
So, well, I was just saying just on fees, real quick. And Jamie's not here, so but he told me last night that Ridgefield are still going back fees. The planning commission or whatever that 6,800, I think, is what. Jamie knows a number a lot less
than what they had originally proposed.
Yeah, and we can thank. I chatted with Steve Stewart about it actually a week or two ago, and we can thank Steve Stewart for the Ridgefield part.
6,200
numbers.
Really?
6,200.
Personally, dug in the numbers like
that's, it's still a lot, but it's not what they're asking for.
55% of what they proposed, 11,000, wasn't it initially?
Yeah, Steve. Personally, he was telling me how he dug into that number, and because he was remembering Jada used to do it at the plant, that Jada was on ESD and she understood that word. So Steve, like, so, and then sounds like, so that's good news for the school impact fees for Ridgefield. We'll see what gets adopted through the county.
How many, I know a lot of districts have got bonds floating out there.
Yeah. Camas too, for sure, yeah. Well, yeah, Camas too.
Camas is a big one.
Yeah.
Vancouver, Evergreen.
Well, they've got just, replacement for what they've already got.
Yeah, replacement levies.
Yeah, Vancouver and Evergreen's just
they're just levies.
Sport sunsets.
Yeah, right. Those are levies, though they're not capital.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Well, this particular one is just an upper region of capital. Like two high schools.
Second, for the plan, we'll talk again before the 30th for the session with the board, which is going to be on the 30th. So next meeting, but I think we've got a game plan going forward.
Before we wrap up that part of the conversation, I was just taking a look at our action list, and we've got, at least from what I can see, four ongoing items: the shoreline exemption, the plat alteration process, the driveway location on the corner lots, and then the retaining wall and the perimeter, and then we've got some other things that work that are kind of out of our hands right now. Impact fee deferrals is, infrastructure percent deduction is. We've certainly made ourselves loud and clear with regards to long range planning on that. I know as far as the 60-day review, Marty, I think you're looking to get trademark replacement taken care of before revisiting that part of it, which is something that we can look at then later on in the year. And some other things require some discussion and maybe some out of meeting discussion with other departments, such as with development engineering, and maybe it's you know, why can't we submit final engineering with a post decision review, things like that. But I just circled three items here that we might want to start thinking seriously.
What numbers are those again? Page three, right?
Starting on page three, the ones that I've circled that we might want to start taking a look at are the SEPA thresholds and exemptions.
Okay, number one.
Number two, that's something, Eric, that you wanted to really take a look at.
Yeah.
And then number 12, another one, Eric, that you wanted to take a look at.
Page four, we go to number 12.
Yeah,
grading permit
process improvements. There's no point in getting them if you're just going to get approval a couple weeks later. You have to submit, you know, a full package anyway. It has to go through first review. And I might, you know, encourage the rest of the board members to look at the rest of these and see if there's anything that we want to take up, you know, sooner than later, so that we have an idea of what the next quarter is for us.
Okay.
So we need to prioritize, basically.
We do. And I don't think we need to do that necessarily today, but I think we should absolutely do it next meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's put that on our list.
Prioritize our...
Marty, you would weigh in on that as well, too, right? If you want to. There you go. They're home.
And that way, if we go to the board with a short list...
I
go to the board with a short list, prioritized list, and then we can then have the opportunity to also hear what they have to say. We can work that into, we're not overextending ourselves, we're leaving ourselves some room to be able to address other things as they come up too.
Which I've got them with, it will be.
I mean, oh, yeah, I'm sure.
They're pretty vocal. So. Next on the agenda, public comment, and not saying any.
We have asked it all. Yeah.
We are adjourned.
So Steve Bacon right here. And Art Gager. Thank you so much for listening. Don, another vigorous meeting here today. Yeah, I know.
Containing wall discussion. Well, you should have been the one I did 3 months ago. And it was that, and then Kevin. Oh, Captain Kevin. Poor Desiree. But they all, it was like, please be working. Please be working. So I'm still hoping. I hope I did that. Yeah.